This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. You're listening to Live and Learn with me, Dafran Johan. The nomination process for the Melaka state elections took place this morning. The state elections will see a minimum of 3 cornered fights in every single constituency as Pakatan Harapan, Barisan Nasional and Perikatan Nasional are set to battle it out for every single seat. And this, you know, is not to mention independent candidates that are set to make certain constituencies a 5-way battlefield. Now, the Melaka state elections is set to take place on the 20th of November. This comes at the heels of 4 members of the Perikatan Nasional / Barisan Nasional Coalition deciding to pull their support from the Chief Minister of Melaka, Dato' Sri Sulaiman Mohamed Ali of UMNO. And that caused the collapse of the government, which leads us to where we are today. So joining me on the show today to discuss the nominations is O.A. San, Senior Fellow at the Singapore Institute of International Affairs. Welcome to the show, A-San. How are you doing?
I'm doing okay, watching the election as everybody else.
Yeah, same here. So let's start with that. Overall thoughts on how the seats have been allocated across the board, and also, you know, certain 3 cornered fights minimum everywhere, some 5 cornered fights. What are your overall thoughts?
Well, I think, of course, this is the first manifestation that in the coming elections, you are going to very likely to see this sort of 3-corner fights, right, between the Pakatan Harapan, Barisan Nasional, as well as Perikatan Nasional. So we see that roughly they still follow the old Barisan formula when it comes to, for example, how does each of these coalition allocate their seats among their component parties. In BN, it's still dominated by UMNO, and then those, for example, Chinese majority seats would go to MCA. In Pakatan, you see a similar setup. The Malay seats are divided among PKR and Amana, with PKR taking up the majority of them. And then the Chinese seats would go to DAP, the Chinese and Indian seats. And the same thing, I think it's applicable to, of course, Perikatan Nasional, whereby Bersatu would take up the majority of seats together with PAS, and then the Chinese seats and then Indian seats are relegated to Gerakan. So, but I think overall, it would mainly be a sort of contest between the Pakatan and Barisan, with Perikatan perhaps playing some roles in the Malay seats when it comes to those contested by PAS. Yeah.
Right. Okay, so let's break it down a little bit. We go through the Harapan side first before we get to the Perikatan and Barisan Nasional side. So what's interesting is Harapan did not allocate a single extra seat to DAP. Now, A-San, when we look at the GE14 results of the Melaka state polls, DAP competed in 8 constituencies and won 8 seats. Logic would dictate that the component party with the best track record should be entitled to more seats. I mean, that's, you know, just the mathematical side of things when we just look at it from a surface level. However, Harapan delegated the seats that were previously allocated to Bersatu to PKR and Amana only, and not even giving a single seat extra to DAP. What do you make of this?
Well, I think the Pakatan side is playing, shall we say, a practical and or realistic and a safe hand there. And that is because, for example, DAP is very likely to deliver all these 6 seats that it is contesting, whereas realistically speaking, DAP will not make any inroads into those seats with Malay majority or significantly large number of Malay voters, even though DAP itself, you know, from time to time, it harbors such thoughts of, you know, making inroads into the Malay majority seats. But this particular election, it's about, you know, who is going to become the next Malacca state government. And there are only 28 seats. There are not a lot of seats for you to sort of, in a sense, test water or to experiment about. Huh? So I think they make a conscious and practical decisions such that those Malay majority or significantly Malay seats are allocated to PKR and Amanah, so that they would have a more realistic chance of winning those seats and thereby, at least from their perspective, hopefully forming the next state government again.
I just want to push a little bit more on this. How we know that racial politics is still incredibly relevant in Malaysia, but how then does a party like DAP, you know, because we keep saying this, you know, whether it's experts, it's politicians, it's journalists, you know, we all keep saying that, you know, if you put, let's say, if DAP goes to a Malay majority seat, they are not going to make any inroads, they are not going to win, they have no chance. How do you know that, you know, how do we expect change if we don't give the opportunity to at least, you know, push and say, you know, we try? Maybe certain constituencies, they have broken away from the race-based politics. I'm wondering if people are, you know, being overly cautious, and that maybe the electorate themselves are more open to, you know, maybe in certain constituencies, the Malay electorate or the Malay heartland will be like, oh, I don't mind DAP because I saw them working hard during the pandemic times and whatnot. Or is it more of just politicians and experts and all of us being overly pragmatic, not willing to take chances?
Well, there's no room for taking chances. We are talking about 28 seats. Whoever gets 15 will form the next government. You simply could not afford to take these chances. We are not talking about 20 or 22 seats. You could experiment with, let's say, up to, say, 5, right? And DAP did make some inroads into those Malay parliamentary seats nationwide. I mean, but still, those are primarily mixed seats, granted with a Malay majority or significantly Malay, but also a significant number of Chinese and Indian voters as well. I think we are talking about, if I remember correctly, Raub in Pahang, for example. So you could then experiment with some of this when you have a larger pool of seats. When you have only 28 seats, you, frankly speaking, don't fool around with this sort of thing. It's just been practical. If we are talking about, you know, a state with a huge number of seats, such as Selangor, for example, right? I think on last count, it's almost 60 seats or 58 seats or something. Then you could afford to experiment with maybe 2-3 seats mix to test water, to see whether a Malay candidate from DAP could perhaps win those seats. Yeah,
right. So a pragmatic approach would be the best approach, is what you're saying. Now, Harvan has decided to field. Now, this is something that I think really has been, the internet has been talking, a lot of people have been talking about for quite some time, but particularly over the past couple of days. Now, Harapan has decided to field Idris Harun and Nor Azman, which are two of the UMNO defectors or so-called frogs who caused the downfall of the UMNO-led Malacca State Assembly. Are fielding these candidates, the defectors, a good move on Pakatan Harapan's end?
Well, I think, again, these, shall we say, pragmatic moves. Frankly speaking, if you are talking about nationwide and perhaps even Malacca statewide, it doesn't look very good on PKR and Amanah, right? That they are, for example, accepting frauds and so on. I mean, there are a lot of primarily online criticisms of these moves. But, well, the electoral politics in Malaysia, it is based on the different constituencies, every single constituency, you need to win that particular constituency. So I think in PKR's and Amanah's opinions, they feel that those two candidates would have a higher chance of winning back their respective constituencies. Now, you and I may or may not agree with that. Huh? Mm-hmm. We may feel that if they put up somebody else, it could have a higher chances. But also, we have to keep in mind, if, let's say, today PKR did not take, Idris Harun and so on, Idris Harun may come out as an independent candidate, and that may actually decrease PKR's winning the chances, for example. Huh? So it's not a very, cautious decision. But again, I think they are making very pragmatic political calculations here.
Right. You brought up the term online. And not just online, when we zoom in on particular platforms, let's say Twitter, right? Twitter is generally seen as a platform mostly composed of Harapan supporters. However, over the past couple of days, it seems like Harapan supporters on Twitter are absolutely fuming at the fact that Harapan decided to field UMNO defectors. Do you think this level of dissatisfaction, especially towards PKR over the past week or so, is reflected on the ground as well? Or do you think this is more just, those who are constantly engaged in political banter and all these current affairs, the nitty-gritty, and the people who are, talking about principles and this and that constantly? Do you think it's just a very small minority, or do you feel that the dissatisfaction towards these two candidates, or towards the idea that a reform-based coalition would field these two candidates, do you think it will be reflected on the ground, or do you think people on the ground will be like, okay, whatever, I'm a PKR supporter, I see the PKR flag or the Harapan flag, I'm just gonna tick that box and move on?
I actually went down to Melaka a few days ago just to take a look for myself. Frankly speaking, from the conversations with, primarily, admittedly, non-Malay voters, there were indeed a lot of revulsions against, at that time, the PKR or Amanah possibly taking in these so-called defectors, right? And now they, of course, actually went ahead and took on these defectors. I think it is somewhat reflected in the ground, but I'm not sure whether it is reflected in the particular constituencies where these gentlemen are running, right? They might still be actually very popular in their respective constituencies as local boys and so on. I think there is somewhat of a sentiment against them doing that, at least as I observe among the non-Malay voters. But in any case, I think it would not be so significant that it would cause DAP their wins in their primarily non-Malay seats. Yeah.
And so that's interesting, right? You say it wouldn't cause it wouldn't be that significant. And that's what I'm very curious about, because, I'm wondering if it's possible if Harapan supporters in Asahan and Pantai Kundur, which are the two constituencies that the UMNO defectors, Idris Harun and Nor Azman, are competing in. I wonder if, because even in those constituencies, there are other races as well, which is the sample space that you sort of surveyed. But let's just assume that even maybe some Malays are also dissatisfied with, you know, this perhaps lack of principles, some might say. I'm wondering, do you think it could be so significant that they sort of do what people, that the voters in Tanjung PI did during the pre, you know, the by-elections a couple of years ago, where they were like, I'm just going to vote for Barisan Nasional, not because I support Barisan Nasional, but just to protest, to show that, we do not stand for this. So we are just going to sacrifice the win and just vote for Barisan, just so Harapan leadership gets it in their head that this is what they want. Do you think that there's enough dissatisfaction, or people will be like, okay, I'm dissatisfied, but let's not complicate matters and just vote with the party that I support?
I hope the voters will be mature enough not to think that way, because a by-election is fundamentally different from the, you know, a general election or a state election. By-election, it's more like an opportunity to vent your frustration and so on, because it's not going to change the ruling coalition in any particular time, right? I mean, you win or lose one more seat is nice or it's not nice, but it's in a sense harmless. It can serve as a lesson and so on. But when you are deciding who is going to form the next state government, it's a very different story. So you have to, as a voter, you have to really decide whether your dislike of this so-called acceptance of frogs is so strong that it overcomes your disdain, your hatred, your dislike towards the other side, possibly because of your votes forming the next state government. You need to make a very, very conscious decision.
On the show with me today is O.A. Sun. He's a senior fellow at the Singapore Institute of International Affairs. After the break, I'll be asking him about Parti Muda. We'll be back with more on Live and Learn, BFM 89.9. Welcome back to Live and Learn. I'm Dashran Johan, and on the show with me today is O.A. Sun, senior fellow at the Singapore Institute of International Affairs. And we're talking about the Malacca State Elections nominations, which just took place a couple of hours ago, few hours ago actually, and what we can expect moving forward. So, Ehsan, let's switch gears a little bit to Muda, Parti Muda. Last week, a couple of weeks ago when we spoke, there were rumblings that they were in discussions with Harapan. They might want to, negotiate maybe a couple of seats with Harapan and field their own candidates, so on and so forth. But these discussions with Harapan did not bear any fruit. And in a press conference, they said that they won't be competing in Malacca with Harapan because Harapan chose to field defectors. Many on social media have expressed that Muda should compete anyway, even if it's against Harapan, especially in the seats of Asahan and Pantai Kundo, where the so-called frogs will be competing. But, as we know, nominations are, the process is done. Muda did not field any candidates. Do you think they should have, especially in Asahan and Pantai Kundo, to fight, if idealism is what they believe in, if they believe in a certain brand of politics, do you think they should have just fought anyway, the way Parti Socialist Malaysia, Dr. Jayakumar, fought in Sungai Siput? He didn't win. Pakatan Harapan won that seat, but he was like, I believe in this cause. I'm going to fight Pakatan and fight Barisan Nasional. What do you think?
Well, if you are so gung-ho about your reformist agenda and so on, then you should present a united front, right? I mean, when you're fighting your enemies, you need to recognize who is the larger enemy and not be distracted into you know, fighting several enemies, you know, talking about subjectivity, right? you need to fight your biggest enemy by working together with what you perceive to be perhaps your second enemy. Then after you defeat your number one enemies, then you can fight with your secondary enemy and so on. So in this case, Muda must be realistic, right? I mean, if Muda were to realize its reformist and progressive agenda, its number one rival in this case would of course be UMNO and to a lesser extent PAS, although in future I think it will be the reverse, it will be PAS and then UMNO, but right now it's UMNO and then PAS. You need to pull together your resources with Pakatan and thereby hopefully presenting a united candidate either from you, Muda, or from Pakatan, and you try to defeat your main enemy. After that, if you succeed in doing so, then you still have differences with Pakatan. Okay, fine, you fight it out with Pakatan. But at the moment, realistically, as Muda, you can of course have your own candidates parking under anybody else's ticket, but the likelihood of you winning a seat, frankly speaking, without the support of, let's say, Pakatan, it's quite slim. So yeah, I think Muda would have to really think what is their main appeal and also how they would go ahead and realize these ideals or appeals of theirs. Yeah.
Okay, so Ehsan, we talked about the opposition side of things. Let's talk about the government side of things. UMNO and Perikatan Nasional includes the likes of Bersatu, PAS, and a couple of other parties. They are not on the same page, as we discussed last week on Beyond the Ballot Box. But now we have a little bit more clarity, and it appears that BN will be competing against not just Pakatan Harapan, but also against Perikatan Nasional in all 28 constituencies. In fact, in 7 constituencies, UMNO will be taking on PAS. Will Perikatan Nasional split the Malay vote, giving room for Harapan to nick a couple of seats they otherwise wouldn't have been able to?
Well, if you look at history, namely not so long ago in the 2018 general election, that was indeed what happened, primarily because UMNO put out PAS as a sort of a third candidate in a number of constituencies, thereby hopefully splitting Pakatan's votes, but you know, PAS ended up splitting UMNO's votes instead. So I can't remember. I think there were like 3 or 4 seats at least where Pakatan were able to squeeze through, primarily because PAS split UMNO's vote. So it is likely to recur again now that in a number of constituencies, as you say, UMNO is facing off PAS and Pakatan. So it remains to be seen. I think whether PAS will split more Pakatan votes or more UMNO votes. I suspect it's the UMNO side. So it's, of course, not such good news for UMNO. As to those seats where UMNO is facing off against Bersatu as well as Pakatan, well, then it depends on to what extent PAS could mobilize its machinery to help Bersatu. Because frankly speaking, I think on its own, Bersatu perhaps could not command a lot of grassroots support. Without PAS's very active assistance, I think Bersatu would not be able to split a lot of votes from either side. Yeah.
On top of splitting votes, do you think Bersatu, putting PAS aside, I'll get to that in just a second, do you think Bersatu, as a singular party, wherever they are competing, do you think they can come out of this maybe with one or two seats at all, or maybe more? Or do you think they will not be able to win anything at all?
If today Bersatu goes into this election without PAS, I think it's very unlikely to for them to win any seat. But with PAS's active assistance, yeah, I think they are likely to win a number of seats, but not many as well. I mean, as a party, you cannot totally depend on another party to help you canvass for votes, right? You must have sort of, shall we say, a basic level of electoral support. Now, how Bersatu won their seats in the previous general election? They were under the Pakatan ticket, right? In fact, I think they were even using the PKR logo to compete. So those voters who voted for them, they are likely to go back to PKR, or you know, some of them may go to UMNO, but I think primarily they will go back to PKR or Amana. So I think Bersatu have to depend heavily on PAS's assistance.
Right. Now, speaking of PAS, how strong is PAS in a state like Melaka? Because there's no question that PAS as a party is incredibly strong. They have very strong grassroots. They play the long game. When it comes to states like Kelantan and all, they are, you know, it's their fortress pretty much. But in Melaka, you know, in the southern side of Peninsula Malaysia, when, you know, in the seats where PAS is going up, you know, against UMNO, not just, you know, UMNO and Harapan, do you think in those seats, PAS actually has a chance to, you know, win not just one, but both? Do you have to win UMNO and Harapan? Do you think that's it's possible for PAS in a state like Melaka?
I think PAS did win a seat many, many years ago. I don't think it's in the last 10 years, but they did win. But in any case, at any one time, I think they would command up to, say, 20% of Malay votes, even in a state like Melaka. So that's quite a significant amount. I mean, even if they don't win any seats in this particular election, if they could sway away 20% votes, they could suck away 20% Malay votes from either side. It could so-called throw the election to either side with a slim majority. So yeah, they still play a very significant role. The same thing, unfortunately, could not be said about Bersatu on its own. Yeah.
Right. Now, Ihsan, we talked about the sentiment on the ground based on, you know, your groundwork, the people you've spoken to. You said, admittedly, you've mainly spoken to, you know, non-Malays. But I'm wondering if your peers or if you, you know, based on some conversations you've had, based on what you've read, what is the sentiment on the ground in the Malay heartland? Some have suggested that the poor handling of the COVID-19 crisis by Perikatan Nasional / Barisan Nasional under the leadership of Tan Sri Muhyiddin Yassin would shift the Malay heartland votes towards Pakatan Harapan, while others say that, yes, rural Malays did get incredibly, incredibly frustrated, but they were going to reject Bersatu, they may reject PAS, but instead of putting their vote for Pakatan Harapan, they would put their vote for UMNO instead. What do you think the sentiment on the ground is when it comes to the Malay heartland?
Yeah, I think the so-called you know, suffering during pandemic sentiment is indeed very rife and alive, and I think it cuts across racial or religious lines, right? Mm-hmm. Because you have B40 suffering, you have the rapidly shrinking M40s also losing their business and livelihoods and so on. But again, to what extent then you shift your votes? I think that is the question. Let's say you think that Versatu did a very bad job of handling both the pandemic and economy. But then you don't want to vote for Versatu, right? Then, of course, AMNO's machinery would say, hey, you know, it's nice. It's nice that you don't like Versatu. Then come and vote for us. Whereas Pakatan would have to somehow convince the voters that, oh, Versatu, I know you don't like Versatu. You know, somehow you should dislike AMNO as well because AMNO is now still working with Versatu. So it depends on what line of persuasion is indeed more persuasive to the voters. And I suspect your second scenario, whereby voters would, to a large extent, distance themselves from Parikatan, but they would then mostly switch to Barisan, or to be more specific, AMNO. I think that is a most likely scenario because I think primarily in the more rural constituencies, the discomfort with Pakatan, I think, is still very much alive and strong. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. All right. So I've just got a couple of more questions for you, Ehsan. One of it is with regard to voter turnout, because Lim Kit Siang has seemingly been worried recently, has expressed his concern a number of times, saying that he thinks the voter turnout could be as low as 40%. And even implied that, you know, people in urban areas, you know, will not show up to vote. But 40% is incredibly low. That's much lower than Sabah, which was around 60%+, also because of travel restrictions and also the pandemic and all of these things compared to GE14, which we got around 85%, the whole entire country got about 85%. There was an 85% voter turnout for GE14. Kit Siang is worried that it could be 40%, very, very low. Do you see this happening as low as 40%?
Well, I think that is certainly a distinct possibility, primarily because, as you mentioned, there was a Sabah state election, right? Mm-hmm. And then it sort of gave rise to a sort of a resuscitation of the coronavirus. And, you know, the pandemic was then out of control for almost a whole year thereafter, right? So I think that fear of, you know, going out to vote and accidentally getting infected and so on, I think is very, very real. When I went to Malacca, almost every single person I spoke to, they would say they would hear from their friends that, you know, it's not worth it to go out to vote. You know, the whoever you vote into office, they are going to flock to the other less desirable sites and so on. So I think it is a distinct possibility. And of course, for DAP, that it's very bad news because if the voters, the DAP supporters do not come out, then the other side, of course, when I say the other side, I mean primarily BN, they have formidable machinery to mobilize their voters to come out to vote. And Kit is, of course, you know, trying to have some sort of rallying call for his supporters here.
Mm. All right. Before we wrap this conversation up, Ehsan, a couple of weeks ago on Beyond the Ballot Box, you gave your prediction saying that it's going to go down to the wire. You said, you know, it'll most likely be around, there's 28 seats, so it will come down to maybe 15, 13, very close. You say you're not sure exactly who's going to win. I mean, it's very difficult to say, but you think AMNO has the slight edge. Looking at the events that have unfolded over the past week and the current list of nominations, the multiple cornered fights and all of these things, do you still think the same? A very tight fight, but AMNO has the slight edge?
I still think AMNO would have the slight edge. They are very bold in putting up primarily fresh and new candidates. I think that is partly to address the factionalism, which is very rampant in Malacca within the AMNO party. You know, might as well put up new candidates instead of you guys are still fighting each other internally, right?
Right.
So that in a sense, well, talking about you know, being fresh, being new, being young, and so on, talking about Muda, then UMNO is essentially saying, well, we are the real Muda, right?
Right.
So that on one hand, so even on that score, it's gonna attract some, shall we say, middle of the road or moderate voters, and you know, who may be tempted to give UMNO a chance. So on the other hand, you see Pakatan, even though they do not indulge in all this internal strife, but frankly speaking, it's a very uninspiring campaign so far. I know campaign period doesn't start yet. I mean, it starts now, but, you know, unofficial campaigning happened already, right? You don't see the same level of very fiery desire to change, to reform and so on, as you saw in 2018. In fact, people were just, you know, speculating, as we discussed just now, is Pakatan going to take in these defectors or not? I mean, nobody is talking about, oh, Melaka needs really fresh changes and so on. It's, so I think Pakatan would have to really sharpen its message in the coming days if it would like to have a fighting chance of, you know, winning and forming the next state government. Yeah.
On that note, Ehsan, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you.
That was O. Ehsan, Senior Fellow at the Singapore Institute of International Affairs, sharing his thoughts on the Melaka state elections, nominations, and what we can expect as we build up towards the state elections that's happening on the 20th of November. If you missed any part of this conversation, you can check out the podcast on the BFM app, bfm.my, or pretty much wherever you get your podcasts from. I'm Dashran Johan, and this has been Live and Learn, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.